All members of the council, all members should have voted against this shameful resolution. To this council, Israeli blood is cheap. This is a travesty, and I am disgusted.
Life must prevail in Gaza. Must prevail in Gaza. Freedom must prevail in Palestine.
Strong reactions there. The first by Israel's ambassador to the UN, then Palestine's. This was following the latest Security Council resolution approved on March 25th, calling for an immediate ceasefire during Ramadan and the unconditional release of all hostages. This is Unscripted. I am Olivia Ndubisi.
And I am Damilola Banjo. Today's podcast followed the ceasefire resolution Olivia mentioned and the challenges to its success on the ground. The fighting hasn't let up and Ramadan ends on April 9th.
You had a chat last month with the Japanese ambassador when his country held the rotating council presidency. Did he indicate whether a ceasefire resolution would be approved?
No, he didn't. However, one of Japan's signature events was stepping up dialogue to achieve global peace and security. It was Ambassador Yamazaki who presided over the council session when the ceasefire vote was passed on March 25.
Will those in favor of the draft resolution contained in document S/2024/254 please raise their hand? Those against? Abstention. The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favor, 0 vote against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 2728-2024.
So I want to ask you, what was clear from your conversation with Vanessa Fraser? She's Malta's permanent representative to the UN, who is rotating president of the council this April. What was it like speaking with her?
Well, she's one of the ambassadors I enjoyed speaking with because she doesn't speak the usual diplomatic jargon. But one exciting thing about her is her dedication to judo. It's nice to know she still finds personal time to enjoy it. But it was clear that the ambassador believes that the March 25 ceasefire resolution was long overdue. The general sense I got is that she and her country believe that a ceasefire is the beginning of everything, and that whatever follows, whether a two-state solution, more humanitarian aid, rebuilding what the war has destroyed, everything would need to start with a ceasefire. Here's what she said about the Ramadan ceasefire.
And we absolutely consider this a step forward. The fact that it calls for an immediate ceasefire for Ramadan leading into a lasting one, which is very important. It means that we expect there to be a cessation of hostilities now, but it should not terminate with when the feast of Ramadan terminates, but that during that time, it should be negotiated into a more lasting peace. So, of course, it is definitely a more important resolution, one that is overdue, and we could not have anything less at this time. What I was in November was important because it broke the cycle of not being able to pass resolutions on the Middle East.
Let's explain what happened in November. That month, Malta drafted and tabled a council resolution calling for humanitarian pauses in the Gaza war. Not a ceasefire, because that was considered too strong a word. The resolution was the first to succeed after numerous others failed since the October 7th attack by Hamas. The Malta resolution passed with 12 votes in favor. The UK, US and Russia abstained. The March 25th adoption by the ETN was the 10th time the council voted on a draft resolution on this war.
Intense fighting is continuing in Gaza just hours after the passing of the first UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire. Witnesses say Israeli warplanes have again bombed the southern city of Rafah, with gun battles raging in other areas.
That's a news report about the ceasefire not holding after had won diplomatic battles to get there. Some background. There have been many previous tries for the Security Council approval on Gaza. Brazil drafted a text that was vetoed in October by the US. The same day, a Russian draft was also vetoed. In November, the Malta text was approved. On December 22, the Council adopted a resolution demanding immediate, safe, and unhindered delivery of humanitarian aid into Gaza. The US and Russia abstained. Algeria led a draft resolution in February, which the US vetoed. The US drafted a resolution that was vetoed by Russia and China in March. Then came the E10 recent text. France might be circulating its draft soon.
Fraser told us the continued fighting in Gaza hurts the success of the March resolution because the deconfliction mechanism in the resolution failed. It was meant to ensure that the Israeli military would not attack humanitarian workers in Gaza.
But because the deconfliction mechanism is not being respected. International humanitarian law is not being respected because the blue flag and the white flag means nothing in Gaza. As Malta, we respect and uphold Israel's right to protect its people and its territory against terrorist attacks. But there are caveats. If you want that right under international law, that right comes with responsibilities under international law. Also, you cannot take the part that you want and disregard the other part that you don't want. You want the right to protect yourself. You have it. We uphold it. We recognize it. But it must be done in accordance with international law and international humanitarian law.
Fraser is not the only one to say this. In previous episode of the podcast, other rotating council presidents have said that while Israel has the right to defend itself against terror attack, the right is not being exercised according to the rule of war, that is, the international law and international humanitarian law.
This brings us squarely into the conversation about war crimes. When we return, what are the chances of the Israelis being prosecuted by the International Criminal Court?
We'll be right back. Are you looking for a talk show featuring leading global voices? Do you want to learn more about how international issues directly affect people locally? Global Connections Television presents the insights of global influencers at no cost to viewers and programmers. GCTV is independently produced and reaches more than 70 million potential viewers worldwide each week. The show covers everything from human rights to climate change, from peace and security to empowering women and girls. It features guests such as Dr. Jane Goodall, former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Mary Robinson, and Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary. The show also hosts expert voices from the private sector, academia, and labor and environmental movements. GCTV is available to public television media outlets, universities, and service clubs for distribution. To watch the show or find out more, click the link in our episode description. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is Unscripted. For this part of the podcast, we talk about war crimes and who might be investigated or indicted for them in Palestine.
Malta is a founding member of the ICC. The ambassador says the court must hurry up its investigation of crimes that may be carried out by Israel now or in the past in Palestine.
We believe and we urge the Prosecutor General Khan to carry out the investigations properly, and where he finds war crimes, he should prosecute. That is our position. Our position is in support of the judicial institutions.
In February, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said war crimes had been committed by all parties in the war in Gaza. But it's important to note that while Palestine is an ICC signatory, Israel isn't. So can Israel answer for war crimes? That was my question to Maya Unga, an analyst with the International Crisis Group, a think tank based in New York City.
I think when we talk about international war crimes, it's important to think about the ICC and who gives it legitimacy. With the ICC, the people that give it legitimacy are the states that make it up. And unfortunately, Israel is not a member of the ICC, and neither is the United States. This is concerning because regardless of what the Security Council does on the front of ICC, you know, holding Israel accountable to its war crimes under that jurisdiction, if Israel and their strongest ally, the US, don't recognize its jurisdiction to be able to be talking and engaging on these issues, there's a limit to what enforceably the United Nations or the Security Council can do.
Unga's response makes you wonder, what do you do when a member state such as Israel does not comply with a Security Council resolution, as in the case so far in the Gaza resolution of March 25th? The Palestinian militants have not stopped fighting against Israel in Gaza either. Unga had more answers.
It's also a very important implication of diplomatic signaling to Israel that the US, although they still abstained and although they were very difficult in the negotiations, you know, this is the farthest that they've gone so far at the UN, being willing to abstain and let this pass. But I think more importantly, it's how much they're willing to listen to the US on this. And if the US is pushing harder, which it's clear by this resolution, they're increasing the pressure on Israel to come to a ceasefire. I think that's significant. And that in itself, we can see leading to some change.
If the latest resolution is a no-go, I asked Unga what else can be done.
You know, you have the option to put sanctions in place, but unfortunately, in this particular instance, any sanctions that someone tried to recommend on Israel for not complying, the US would automatically block. And so a lot of the utility of the council right now to be engaging on these issues and continuing to try to hold Israel accountable is also just holding them accountable in the court of public opinion.
Something striking she said was recognizing Malta's role in what she called diplomatic maneuvering. She explained that Malta strategically highlighted a very specific issue in their November resolution, which is children in conflict. It's a position that is hard to disagree with because, as she said, children should be shielded from the effects of war.
This was clear from my chat with Fraser as well. She said she had a particular interest in the roles women diplomats can play.
Men want to end the war and women want to make peace. There is a difference, and we really have the capability of compromising for the big picture, for the long run. And not because we are better than men, but men and women bring different things to the table. So you need both. Women and children are always disproportionately affected, but in Gaza, they're disproportionately affected.
That's our podcast for this month. This episode was co-produced by Damilola Banjo and me, Olivia Ndubisi, for Pass Blue. Dulcie Lineback is our editor.
A lot happens at the UN beyond what we report on each episode of Unscripted. And Pass Blue is covering the important geopolitical tensions surrounding the world today. For day-to-day coverage, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And to subscribe to our news site, go to passblue.com.
Pass Blue's in-depth and exclusive stories and this podcast are possible with the support of the Carnegie Corporation of New York and the Open Society Foundations, as well as our fiscal sponsor, the Institute for Nonprofit News.
Unscripted is available wherever you find podcasts.